Jokic behind his back. What a take by Jokic.
That's your sitter. Wow.
Inside is Bobby rejects it.
I'll get you a
Jokic. Harris goes again.
Welcome in, ladies and gentlemen, to the Pickaxe Pundit Show. I am your host, Zach Nikosh with DenverStiffs.com. You are listening to the Denver Stiffs Podcast Network, and it is Monday morning here in the Mile High City. The weather, as we always like to check in on here on the Pickaxe Pundits. I don't know why, by the way. I don't know why. I've realized this has just become like this thing that I always do, and I think it's now it's just second nature. So the weather is brightening up in Colorado, and so is the play of the Nuggets. After last week's show, we were down in the dumps. Nuggets were losing games left and right, and that's how this week started out with the loss to the Milwaukee Bucks, or last week, I should say. But the Nuggets then bounced back, now have won three in a row, including winning at Oklahoma City on the second night of a back-to-back. It was a big week. I had Mr. Ryan Blackburn, host of Nuggets Numbers, on to break down those earlier games. And then I figured if we've got Ryan Blackburn on, we might as well just go full podcast network with this one. So I brought in Brendan Vogt to break down that big win in Oklahoma City specifically, because that one was so huge. And then in our second half of our show, we're gonna look forward to this upcoming week. Nuggets got two games. It's kind of a weird schedule. Only two games this week. Big one at home tomorrow night on national TV against Los Angeles Lakers. And then they wrap up the week on Friday in Portland to start, I believe, a five-game road trip, a stupid road trip that has them going all over the entire country, well, two different countries, and it's going to be probably the biggest challenge in terms of schedule they've had thus far this year. So I brought in host of The Dig, Jeremy Poley. He is with us to break all of that down, and that is going to make up our show. So without further delay, let's get right to it and get to Mr. Blackburn. All right, so to wrap up what happened earlier in the week, we're first going to bring in Ryan Blackburn, as I said. Ryan is out in, well, I don't know, Ryan, are you in South Carolina, or Ryan is in parts unknown?
I am in South Carolina, Zach, in a town just west of Columbia in Greenville, South Carolina, at the in-laws' house. Doing great over here. We're gonna trust this internet connection, see what it can do, and hopefully things go well.
Ryan's gonna get yelled at later by his mother-in-law. Not technically in-law, right? Ryan, because you're not married yet.
But, not yet. We'll just have to play that one by ear. How about that?
I was like, we don't want your girlfriend listen to this and be like, surprise. this is actually new. But you know, if they come in and yell at you for if your girlfriend's mom yells at you for using all the bandwidth, just tell her it's for an uber important podcast that's heard around the world.
Absolutely. Hey, parts unknown, right?
Parts unknown. There you go. How was your Thanksgiving, sir?
You know, it was good. We had a great time. I always like getting together with this group of family members just because it's nice to see how other families do Thanksgiving when you grow up in the same house all the time. It's nice to see what other people do, what kind of similarities and differences you have, and things were great. We had a great turkey. I enjoyed a bunch of my favorite side, macaroni and cheese. Do you have a favorite Thanksgiving side?
You know, I'm a big fan of the green bean casserole. I know most people aren't, but
yeah, that's a hot take right there, man.
That's right. I have a secret, when I make it that makes it extra delicious. I'm not gonna let it out here on the Pickaxe Pundits, because like I said, it's worldwide.
We'll have to talk off air.
That's right. We'll keep this one off air. That way I can protect my trade secrets. Check out my cooking podcast every Tuesday. No, I'm just joking. All right. Let's get into it, Ryan, though. So there is so far three games on already through on this week. Well, it's a big week. We were just talking before the show started how it's tough. You got a one-hour podcast. You got to fit in four different games plus a look ahead. So we're going to start with the first three that have already passed. And they're right at this point, going back to the first one there against the Milwaukee Bucks, that was the loss so far this week. Nuggets still have to play Oklahoma City tonight. But when you look at the way they lost to the Bucks, because they got up on them, they had, I mean, it looked good, right? They came out, they were pretty much getting what they wanted. Nobody was scoring on Milwaukee's end. I think they got up by as much as maybe like 17 points. When they let the Bucks come all the way back, Chris Middleton hits that dagger three. After he hadn't hit a shot all night long, he hits that dagger three. And Milwaukee ends up with the win. I mean, how demoralizing is it when you've lost? At that point, they had lost, right, what, 5 out of 6? You lose a game like that. I guess, should we be more surprised with the way they bounced back, because that loss should have been so demoralizing for them?
Well, you know, it's really tough to get a gauge on that game specifically. The Milwaukee Bucks are a really good team. And they may be the best team in the East this year, or at least competing for that title. Giannis Antetokounmpo, as he showed in that contest, was incredible. Chris Middleton had an off game that day, but he's been pretty great with regards to his two-way play in Mike Budenholzer's system. As the Nuggets had seen in their previous contest against the Bucks, Brooke Lopez was extremely dangerous, and I thought they did a pretty good job on him this past game. But in the end, Giannis Antetokounmpo played like an MVP candidate, and especially down the stretch on both ends of the floor, he really showed just what he can do. And Nuggets fans will point to Nikola Jokic as a potential MVP candidate down the road, but Giannis Antetokounmpo is already there. He is incredible. He truly outplayed Paul Millsap in that game, and I thought really made the entire difference during that second half. The Nuggets only scored 42 points in the second half that game after getting out to a strong start offensively. I thought Giannis was great defensively, and the Bucks kind of fed off of that energy, and they kind of just went from there. So should Nuggets fans be really upset? No, I don't think so. I think that on the road against Milwaukee, I know it was a tough position, given that they had already lost 5 of 6, but taken individually, I don't think fans should really be too stressed out about this game.
Right. Yeah, I tend to agree, and it's easy to say now because we do have the benefit of the hindsight a little bit. There, but I guess the one thing I would say that's really concerning that we saw in the back-to-back games going all the way back to last week when they played the Pelicans, and then they had the back-to-back game now against the Milwaukee. They those were two games in a row where we saw the star player of the other team essentially take over the game, and there was nothing the Nuggets could do to stop it. Right, that Giannis pretty much said, "I'm going to win this game for my team," just like Anthony Davis said the game before, and there was nothing the Nuggets could do about it. That was the biggest concern, I think. And then, of course, getting up by 17 points like they did to let that slip away is also rather disappointing. But the nice thing about it, right, is they bounce back. They come off of that game. They've got a road game against Minnesota, who's a quality team, who's finally passed the whole Jimmy Butler drama, who seems to be doing well. They come and they basically, I mean, they willed their way to a win. They almost let that one get away from them as well, because they had such a huge, third quarter to get the game to get the lead, and then they almost let the Timberwolves bench come back and win the game. I think they got it back within about 1 point there with the bench, and then obviously not able to overcome and get the win. I mean, is this when you think about it, Ryan? You think about how they had to basically come back there, like I said, in the third quarter, then hold off this team to win. They do it in or on the road. They do it against the team who knocked them out of the playoffs last year. I mean, I started looking back and thinking about this year. I was like, is this their best win of the season? I mean, I know they beat the Warriors and the Celtics, but this one felt more like the kind of effort that you said, this is a team that is clearly one of the better teams in the NBA.
Well, you start playing with a little bit more desperation, and I thought that that was extremely important. Going into this game, the Nuggets really had to have one. Not as much necessarily in the previous contest against Milwaukee, but against Minnesota, one player that I thought really took that to heart was Paul Millsap. You talked about how Anthony Davis and Giannis Antetokounmpo had been extremely good in the previous two games. Karl Anthony Towns still played reasonably well during that game, but I thought Paul Millsap, who was matched up against him for much of that game, did an excellent job in combating a star big man, making him work for every shot that he had. And while Cat definitely had some opportunities go his way, I thought Paul Millsap definitely got the better of him in this time. And it made the entire difference because the Nuggets could then focus on their other parts. Nikola Jokic wasn't perfect, but he did a reasonable job in that game, facilitating offense and whatnot. He had the old Jason Kidd double-double, just as he did in this past Orlando Magic game with 10-plus rebounds and 10-plus assists. I think that that's really intriguing going forward, and when you can get scoring like that in different places than your big three, given that the big three of Jamal Murray, Gary Harris, Nikola Jokic scoring wise has been, I would say, subpar over the course of this first stretch of games that we've played this season. I think that's really important that Millsap was able to pick up the slack. He had 25 points in that game, 5 assists in that game, really created a lot of the offense and carried the Nuggets through some of those stretches. It was huge and kind of exactly what you needed right at that time.
Right. He also defensively, was outstanding throughout the entire night. It was the game that I can't think of another game that I've watched where when Millsap played, I said, yep, that's why we paid him $30 million. But that game right there was the one where it was like, and now granted, $30 million is still a ton of money to be paying Paul Millsap. But that game right there, you looked at it and you said, that's a star player winning a basketball game for us. And that's essentially what got him that contract with Denver. Was he was a star player who could win them basketball games, and you got that from him. And it's just good to see, because like you said, we've had other guys struggle. I mean, Jamal Murray was pretty good that night. Gary Harris hit some shots. They did enough on offense. They got enough on their from their contributing guys. But like you said, Jokic wasn't scoring. I mean, he was obviously setting up guys with the 10 assists, but you needed someone to lean on to in that moment. And it's exactly what you should expect, right? When your team has lost 6 of 7 and you're on the road against a division rival and you're sitting and you need a win, your guy, your veteran who you're paying the most money on the team, who's one of your star players, is the one who steps up and gets you the victory. That's exactly how that's supposed to go. So that's really encouraging to see from Millsap's point of view. Because like I said, I don't know that we've seen another game quite like that since he's been in Denver, where you really felt like, hey, this guy was clearly the best player on the court tonight, and was the reason for the win. That
totally 100%. I've been pretty vocal about how Paul Millsap just looks slower this year, just looks a little bit less athletic, is not finishing as well around the rim. Offensively, he just has turned the ball over in some tough spots during the course of this season. But that game, as you said, perfect encapsulation of what you're looking for from a guy of his caliber, just being the defensive ace, the defensive kind of jack of all trades that you're looking for, the guy who you could put on the opposing team's best scorer and then count on an efficient offensive performance on the other end. He went 11 of 13 in that game offensively when nobody else could hit a shot. But again, like as we have seen over the course of these past few games, and really over the course of the entire season, the Nuggets have adopted his grit and grind mentality, I would say, on the defensive end. And you talk about losing the game against Milwaukee. Milwaukee only scored 104 points. It wasn't like they blew the doors off of Denver like they did in the previous contest. The Nuggets have really turned into a great defensive team. Maybe great is overselling it a little bit, but a really solid defensive team that you can count on night in, night out, putting forth effort from all five positions. And Nikola Jokic has been big with that, but Paul Millsap has really instilled that this time.
Right. As goes his nickname. I mean, he's called the Anchor Man, right? Because he's the anchor on your defense, and that's absolutely. And he is. He is for the Nuggets and has been, and it's really allowed. You know, it's allowed the defense to improve with the other guys improving as well. Like you mentioned, Jokic. You know, with Jokic, not only is the effort, I think it's just defensive IQ now is at an all-time high, and he's. He's making every rotation and everything position is exactly where you want him to be on the defensive end. And that means Millsap's not out there trying to make up, for his mistakes and having to cheat back into the lane or something because Jokic didn't get out on a guy or because Gary Harris or Jamal Murray, let a guy get right by him and that sort of thing. And it's giving him more room to just be, an all-around defender, and that's giving. I think that's been a huge part of this whole transformation on defense. Is the Nuggets, the other players playing defense better, allows Millsap to play defense better because he's not constantly trying to make up for their mistakes, which I think we saw a lot at the end of last season. All right, let's turn the page to the last win here that the Nuggets just got last night. That was against the Orlando Magic. Nuggets win going away blowout fashion in that one, 112-287. The thing about it that is interesting, and this is something we've seen I think all season long, honestly. But the high score of the Nuggets starters was Jamal Murray with 16 points. It took him 18 shots to get there. Your next highest scorer was Paul Millsap with 14, and then Wancho had 10. Those were the only players in double figures amongst Denver's starters. Of course, Jokic with another one of those Jason Kidd double doubles, like you said, Ryan. He has 11 assists to go along with 10 rebounds, only 6 points though, only scored in the third quarter. The only time Jokic scored last night was about a 3-minute stretch in the third quarter where he got 6 points in a row. But the Nuggets bench last night, specifically, I mean, their big men, Mason Plumlee and Trey Lyles, those guys combined for 37 points. Plumlee gets 11 boards and 4 assists of his own, so he was a huge factor. I watched the game last night. I watched it on League Pass, so I was watching the Orlando Magic feed. At least I'm going to say League Pass. Anybody who knows that I live in Colorado can probably figure out that's not true, but we'll just say that's where I watched it. So I got the Orlando feed, and they were incredibly complimentary of Mason Plumlee and Trey Lyles in that game and talking about how that's one of the best big men backup tandems in the NBA. Of course, another solid night for Monty Morris, 4 assists, 0 turnovers, as you would expect. Is that the biggest key, Ryan? I mean, it's got to be, right? The bench is absolutely the reason the Nuggets not only win this game, but win this game in blowout fashion.
Sure. I mean, you definitely see across the board there, the Nuggets' primary 4 reserves were Monty Morris, Mason Plumlee, Trey Lyles, Malik Beasley. They were plus 10, plus 23, plus 16, plus 13, respectively. I think one player that plays with them, Jamal Murray, needs a lot of the credit, too. He didn't have a perfect game. He took 18 shots, only made 7 of them. But his presence on the floor, he was a plus 37, really providing a lot of pressure on the opposing team. Right. I thought he played pretty solid defense throughout the game. He made the right decision. With this bench unit allows each of those guys to fill their ideal role. Monty Morris is the facilitator. He's a great pick and roll partner with Mason Plumlee. Mason Plumlee is kind of the defensive anchor on the team, and he can facilitate at times, but most of the time he's best used as a pick and roll big where he can get above the rim. And that's where he's at his best finishing. Trey Lyles is really at his best creating one-on-one, I would say. He went 9 of 15 from the field, 22 points. Just a very strong performance inside the arc for him. Still has to find that jump shot on the outside, only 1 of 5 from 3. But I'd say those 4 guys, and then you add Malik Beasley as kind of a floor spacer and athletic defender.
Right, and our rim runner. And
absolutely. Like those, that unit is a really solid unit, and it wouldn't surprise me at the end of the year if that's like maybe Denver's second or third most played unit on the year, and it turns out to be one of their most positive as well, because you have some very stark positives, especially when guys are going against bench players. Monty Morris is usually an advantage on that end. Mason Plumlee, usually an advantage. Trey Lyles has been up and down, but I would certainly say is mostly an advantage against the opposing four. Really solid unit, and something that the Nuggets have been able to rely upon while their starters have been up and down.
Right. Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I think we've seen it all season. And, you know, I think that the interesting thing with Mason Plumlee specifically is that the Nuggets brought him in and the whole idea was, oh, he's such a good passer himself that he will be able to replicate. We won't have to completely change our offense when Nikola Jokic goes off the court. That was the idea. But what we found out early on in that experiment was, well, like, yeah, he is a good passer, but he's nowhere near the type of passer and distributor that Nikola Jokic is. No big man is. And you just can't expect him to be that entire focal point on offense like you do with Jokic. But what we're finding now this year is if you make that the secondary focal point, you still give him a true point guard because he really hasn't had that pretty much his entire time in Denver. But if you give him a true point guard to play with him and let that point guard be the main facilitator, which is what Monty Morris does for the bench, then you can still run, like you said, you run the pick and roll with Mason Plumlee. He can run that as his primary action. And I mean, how good has that been? How many times have we seen Mason Plumlee finish an alley-oop pass from Monty Morris on the pick and roll? It seems like they're good for one or two of those a game. And then, but your secondary action can still be running some of those similar concepts that you would do with Jokic, except with Plumlee as a facilitator. That as they've done that, I think it's made him extremely effective, and is really they're at the point now where they're maximizing all of Mason's skills. The only thing they're not maximizing is his minutes. Simply, and coach brought this up when he was asked about the big men in the rotation and how nice it is. You know, he said one of the hardest parts is you got a guy like Mason Plumlee who's playing awesome, and you can only play him 18, 20 minutes. Because that's all he's good for. So because you need to get Nikola Jokic back in. So it's definitely a different mixture of bench units that's really helps us. My
100%, man. I totally agree with that. I would say that the best thing that Mason Plumlee does for that unit is just provide a nice anchor defensively. One of the things that he's done, and I think has really impressed the coaching staff, is he consistently blitzes the pick and roll when he's out there. Those guys are great when he is playing in space, and he's one of the few big men that the Nuggets really have that has been able to match up and switch onto a variety of different players. When he switches onto guards, you don't necessarily feel like he's out on an island. He has some great feet out there. He has the length and the vertical to contest most of those shots. Really impressed with what he has done. But it's hard. Like, Nikola Jokic is the future and the present of this team right now. He is the best player. He has to continue to play those minutes. And I think we saw a brief experiment with the Jokic-Plumlee lineup against Minnesota. I don't think that that's going to be a consistent thing, just because you want Millsap out there. You want Trey Lyles out there developing and also providing some more spacing. But in the end, I think that it's comforting to know that Mason Plumlee can provide that presence for you. If Jokic were to go down, if Jokic were to turn an ankle during a game and just wasn't able to return, Mason Plumlee would be able to provide at least a semblance of that presence that Nikola Jokic has.
Right. Yep. No, I agree 100%. All right, Ryan. Well, I tell you what, we're gonna let you get out of here, and we will we'll keep the show rolling. We'll talk about that Thunder game next, but for now, we'll let Ryan get back to his girlfriend and their family. So, appreciate it, sir.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
All right. So that was Ryan Blackburn and also my 2-year-old. Daughter there briefly. Let me tell you, do not try and record a podcast past 8 a.m. on the day that you've told your daughters you're going to take them to see Santa. It's not well advised on that. However, moving on, though, we are now, by the magic of radio, have bumped ahead to after the Oklahoma City Thunder game, the Nuggets with a huge win over OKC, almost after getting a huge lead, almost let it slip away. But they do hang on and get the win to talk about all things regarding that game. I have brought in Mr. Brendan Vogt, host of the Full Court Press. Brendan, what's going on?
What's going on, man? Thanks for having me. It's been a while since I've been on your podcast, so pumped to...
You know, I mean, you're like you're a big time host of your own podcast now. So
that's true, and a TV show. Don't sell me short. Right. Yeah.
And long story short, is you've really just forgot about all the little people along the way entirely.
Yeah, I try to make some time. You know, remember your roots. That's what I've been told.
That's right. Your roots of 3 months. We appreciate it. We appreciate it. Sir, we appreciate the time as well. So, yeah, the Nuggets, obviously, they're going to close out the week on a high note with this win over the Oklahoma City Thunder. I think when certainly at the beginning of the year, if you were looking at the schedule, you'd probably put this game down as a schedule loss and wouldn't have thought much more of it, obviously, on a back-to-back in Oklahoma City. And then with as well, they've been playing as of late. You really thought this would be a game that just have a tough time winning. They almost win it going away, right? They let the Thunder get back in it, but ultimately it was really never too close. I mean, they never got within a possession or so. The right out of the gate, though, they had little struggles on the offense, and that may or may not have been correlated to Torrey Craig getting the start. Gary Harris does not play because of an ankle injury. Torrey Craig gets the start in his place. Had a rough game. I don't even know if I could say had a rough game offensively.
I think he had the type of game. It's really the best you can hope for from Torrey offensively, right? It's not like he was, but like those offensive rebounds, those second chance points, he found ways to contribute to the offense despite, you know, being the non-shooter, the non-threat, frankly, that he is.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, he still shoots 50%. Most of those, though, on putbacks. The six offensive rebounds, though, that was huge. None huger than, I mean, he had one of them it was about 20, 30 seconds left in the game. And that pretty much was the final nail in the coffin for the game. I mean, what do you think, Brendan? Was this the right move, I guess, to go with Torrey Craig? Because you could have gone with Malik Beasley as a starter. You could have started Monty Morris, slid Jamal Murray over to the two. But instead they go with Torrey Craig. Do you think that was the right call here?
Yeah, hindsight's 20/20, right? It's pretty hard to have watched that game and say otherwise. I know when I saw that Malone was going to start Craig, I did not think it was the right decision. I really thought that, you know, I think Malik is still a raw player on both ends of the court, but he's shown strong potential on both ends of the court. When he's got his head screwed on straight on the defensive end in terms of physical capability, I think he has the potential to be a great perimeter defender. So, and with the way he's been shooting lately, I thought for sure he'd get a shot in this game. And I didn't love the idea of Craig being in there, but of course, watching it play out the way it did, they won because their defense was stellar all night. And I think that starts with the job that Torrey Craig did on Russell Westbrook, man. I mean, Westbrook was a non-factor in this game.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, no, he played outstanding defense on Westbrook all night long. And that was, I thought, certainly the right call because, you know, the other thing that you look at when you have a guy who's injured, a starter like Gary Harris, is, you know, at first I thought maybe they'll go with Monty Morris because Monty Morris is probably the bench guard who is playing the best right now. But then you're also now moving you're taking your normal starting point guard and shifting him over to shooting guard. So you're actually disrupting two positions instead of just one. So when I started to rethink it, I said, well, maybe it makes more sense than to just do a swap out for Gary Harris. And I thought for a second, I was like, well, of course we'll go with Malik Beasley. But then when it was Torrey Craig, I was like, that makes sense because you don't want to automatically put yourself behind the eight ball by asking Jamal Murray or Monty Morris, one of those two guys, to defend either Russell Westbrook, or then there was a potential that, you know, Dennis Schroeder was going to start as well. And then when Oklahoma City decided to start Timothy Luwawu-Cabaret, then it pretty much had to be that you had to go with one of the bigger guards. And so Torrey Craig, I guess he really just makes sense there, because then you know you can put Jamal on Luawu, and it's going to be you feel okay in that matchup, and now you've got the defender you want of Russell Westbrook. So I thought it was a good move as well. Like we've said, I mean, Torrey doesn't give you much on offense, but they ended up not needing that because their bench ends up really carrying them throughout this game. Trey Lyles, another big game off the bench. Mason Plumlee, another big game off the bench. And then Jamal Murray had a big game as a starter as well. Where he shot the ball a lot, I guess, is one way to put it. The other guy, of course, though, who shot the ball a lot was Nikola Jokic. He had a great look. He was really good down the stretch there, right? He had some good baskets that were not easy shots, good runners in the lane. 0-for-7 from three, though, absolutely could not get that thing going down. 6-for-20 from the field overall. Three games in a row now, Brandon, we've seen Jokic, under 10 points. Really hasn't been much of an impact player in terms of just shooting the ball. He's found other ways to impact the offense, chiefly obviously with his distribution. But is it something to be concerned about that he's been struggling off on offense as shooting as much as he has?
I'm not worried about that even a little bit, man. Honestly, I think first of all they're winning these games, and I think they're doing it because they're playing Jokic ball. And I think almost more important than, okay, did Jokic get 20 points, is are the Nuggets hitting down open shots? I mean, tonight's not a great example. They weren't like a knockdown shooting team tonight. Obviously, with Craig in there, that hurts. But I'm more concerned with, like, okay, are they playing Jokic ball for three quarters, and how do they operate in the fourth quarter? A lot of their fourth quarters and their struggles there, a lot of that's been Jokic. His inability to score, his inability to make an impact outside of the scoring. So tonight was sort of the inverse, right? He struggled all game long, but I thought he was really good in the final 6 minutes there. I thought he was aggressive, and they needed it. It was at a time when everyone else seemed to have cooled off. So, yeah, the only part of Jokic and scoring that ever concerns me is how interested does he look in the final moments of a game? And tonight he looked interested. Tonight he made a strong impact. So, no. And I think I saw a stat out there that when you look at the Nuggets' wins and their triple-doubles, and I think just what he averages in their wins overall, I think it's 14, 15 points per game for Jokic. That really seems to be the optimal number. I don't think you need him to get you 20, but what you can't have is him shrinking away in the fourth. Tonight he didn't, so no, man, I'm not worried.
Right, yeah, exactly. You've got to have him step up and be willing to take those shots. And it was kind of the inverse in a lot of what we've seen from Jokic, because he wasn't knocking him down. A lot of times he will just kind of he'll kind of bottle up and he'll just stop shooting because he's worried about the fact that they're not going down. That wasn't the case tonight, and they continued to not go down. But like you said, he got aggressive. He got to the foul line there down late in the game, which was key. And like I said, he got those shots in the lane that really kind of helped seal the deal for them. I thought, you know, tonight was maybe the first of the three games that I've noticed it, I guess, a little bit more, because you're right. They've been playing Jokic ball regardless, and he's been doing plenty. I mean, he's had double digit assists in the last two games coming into this one. The thing about tonight was, and I guess if you're gonna have a criticism of him and the game tonight, would be it was, you know, the fouls. He got himself into foul trouble, and then what happened is you're already down Gary Harris in that third quarter when he got into foul trouble early, picked up that fourth foul, I think, with about 10 minutes still to go in the quarter, had to come out. Well, then the Nuggets went to a lineup that had Plumlee, Millsap, and Craig all in there at once, and that's really the point where the game kind of turned and went back into Oklahoma City's favor, because that's the point where the Nuggets pretty much could not sustain any sort of offense whatsoever. So if that's the thing, I think more so than the shooting not being there that concerned me tonight was just the foul trouble and taking himself out of the game.
I'm glad you bring that up, man, because I think the two, given how well Jokic has played defensively this season, which is a wild sentence, but I mean that wholeheartedly.
Right.
I think the two biggest criticisms now are what we talked about earlier, just not necessarily scoring, but the final minutes. Is he interested? Right. Is he making an impact? But what you just said, I think that's the biggest criticism I have, is he seems to pick up that second foul, that fourth foul really quickly. Right. And often there's at least two fouls in there that didn't need to happen. Not just dumb fouls. purposeful fouls. You know, he'll do that thing where he gets frustrated and he fouls in transition, or he just slaps someone's arm and points at the ref. He's too valuable to his team to do that. And, you know, you look at how his minutes per game have been down this year. Obviously, I think it's because he's not in great shape and is being asked to play harder on defense. But I think some of it, Zach, is that they can't keep him on the floor.
Right.
And so I think you're absolutely right. That's actually more than the scoring is what I'm focused on with Jokic is, hey, man, can you not perpetually be in foul trouble? Because your teammates need you when it matters most.
Right, yeah, exactly. That's the most effective way to defend him, is to get him into foul trouble, because then he's got to go sit on the bench. And you know, that it's really the only way to stop him. If he's on the court, he's going to impact the game. So
yep.
He's got to find a way. And I get, you know, there's a certain thought process behind if the team you're playing against has, you know, gets a live ball turnover and is headed on a fast break, well, you're better off fouling them, make him go earn it from the free throw line. Or in a lot of cases, if you're not, you know, obviously if you're not in the bonus, then you just go ahead and foul them and then stop the play, let it reset in the half court. But one, there's Jokic is so valuable that doing that and adding to his foul total, it cheapens, you know, really how effective or efficient that decision is. And then the second thing is, I think sometimes with him, it's really like that. It almost feels like that's like the internal excuse he might be using, because really there was probably one or two other Nuggets leaking out who could have potentially had a chase down block. Yep. or stop the fast break, you know, but he still ends up just taking the foul and stops it right there. I think those you got to button up, because that's, like we said, he's got to be on the court, obviously, to be effective. Hashtag analysis. But that's the best way, like I said, to defend him is to get him into foul trouble. All right, one more thing, Brendan, then we'll let you get out of here. So, I mean, the Nuggets, we were all in a pretty down in the dumps, right, as this week opened, especially the Nuggets. They lose that game to Milwaukee, a tough loss, another one where they had a big lead early on. That one they do let get away from them and end up losing, what was that, six of seven? Now they've turned around, right? They're on a three-game winning streak to close out the week, including this win. Like I said, in Oklahoma City on the back-to-back. Granted, OKC was on a back-to-back as well, but they were home yesterday as well, so there was no travel involved. Do you feel like, you know, I guess when the Nuggets started 9-1 and then went lost 6 of 7, you felt like, okay, that 9-1, the good feelings for the 9-1 start are over. Do you feel like now with this this three-game winning streak, now that we're kind of past the negative feelings, if you will, of the losing 6 out of 7.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's funny, Zach. I think we're where we thought we would be at the start of this season. Right. We got here in a much different way, right? It feels like they've already played three different seasons. Right. But I don't think they were the 9-1 team. I don't think they were the 1-6 team. So on track for 2 seed? No, I mean, the fourth quarter execution, they were just up by too much against Orlando. It didn't look good in Minnesota. It didn't really look great tonight, man. I mean, they held on, but
right.
It felt like for dear life. So as long as those issues are there, I don't think you can necessarily say, okay, they're going to challenge Golden State and Houston in terms of seeding. But are they back on track for to fight for that 4 seed, for 5th seed? Absolutely. Absolutely. I think really, man, I think they've been back for 4 or 5 games. And what I mean by that is they've been rolling. Maybe they haven't won the games, but the offense has looked good. There's been stretches of strong defense. The biggest thing out of the fourth quarter issues for me, Zach, is just open shots. And I think when this team hits just a small amount, right, of their open shots, or they hit a lot of them, they're really, really tough to beat, because they actually do almost everything else well. The defense is legit. We know how they play quarters 1 through 3 through Jokic ball. The offense is back. Wancho's been a big part of that. So to me, it's when they're hitting their open shots, there's not a whole lot of problems. I think they're a really, really good basketball team. So it's been a roundabout path, Zach, but I think we're exactly where I expected we'd be in terms of seeding and feeling about the team to this point in the season.
Yeah, you know what's interesting is I agree with you in that that I think we're back to feeling kind of where we thought this team is or what we thought this team should be. We're, and it is a really, really odd bounce back and forth. I mean, they're right there in a really tight race at the top of the Northwest Division. I mean, because you think about it, we're 25% of the season is through now. We're a quarter That's of the crazy. Way done. Yeah, That's exactly. Crazy. And it feels like it just started, but here we are, and the Nuggets are currently sitting first in the Northwest Division, fourth in the conference. You know, they're right where you wanted them to be. And they're right where you thought they had to be, because you know that the back end of this schedule is going to be very difficult. What I think is encouraging is we're seeing them win. We've seen during the 9-1 streak and now in this 3-game winning streak that they've got some things maybe that are different about them this year that are going to help them to be different than the team that's faded down the stretch the past two seasons. But what's funny is I'm actually different than you, though, on what I think they need to get back to or what I thought that they have got back to, which is they've got back to playing defense. You know, that they've lost every single game that they lost in that 6-7, with the exception of the Memphis game, which, you know, they just lost, flat out lost a Memphis-style game. And nobody's going to – Memphis won 89-87. Nobody's going to win a game 89-87 more than a team like the Grizzlies. But, you know, every other single game, the Nets, they gave up 112. The Bucks, they gave up 121. Rockets gave up 109. Pelicans, 125. Bucks again, 104. Every other time, they pretty much – they didn't have that same defensive focus and defensive intensity. And if you look at the games they've won, there's not a ton of games where Denver this entire season has won, you know, won games just running away and outscoring teams. They're winning games because they've locked teams down on the defense. And against the Thunder, it was just so prevalent the entire time, you know, that they did not shoot the ball particularly well. Even the guys who scored, like Murray, you know, he didn't shoot the ball very well. I mean, Jokic, as we said, did not shoot the ball very well. I mean, Trey Lyles was pretty much the only one who really, you could say, shot it well at all. But somehow they built this huge lead, and they did it because they had defense.
You're right. First of all, a man after Michael Malone's heart over here. But, yeah, I mean, look, Malone and Millsap, separately in different, you know, sessions with the media, pretty much said what you're saying. This isn't rocket science, man. We were 9-1 because we were great at defense. Then in the 1-6 stretch, we didn't play good defense and we lost. I think you're right. I think the defense is back. Like, I think it's there. I mean, that stretch, those opponents were brutal for them. Brooke Lopez went 8-for-12 from three that one night, and he went 0-for-12 the other night. You know what I mean? Like, sometimes it's just like, and Houston's a nightmare matchup. So I definitely think that as they got so concerned with trying to get their offense back, they took their foot off that defensive pedal for sure. And I think you're right that being at least a top 15, if not top 10 defense is going to be paramount to them sort of making a real run out West. But I just think that, like, there was a lot of questions about, okay, what's wrong with the offense? What's wrong with the offense? More often than not, when Craig hasn't been in, I don't think there has been a problem. I think they just haven't been hitting shots. So that's really all just to say I like the way that they've played, and maybe a couple bounces here, a couple bounces there. Some games go their way. But look, man, they're tied for second, three-way tie, half game back. So I guess I'd be silly to complain about anything right now.
Right. Yep, exactly. It's if you had told us at the beginning of the year they'd be 13-7 through the first 20 games, we would have all taken it. So
but if I told you that 20 games through the season their defense would be better than their offense and that Will Barton was hurt, what would you think their record would be?
You'd be like, well, they're probably like a, you know, what, an 8-12 team or something.
It's wild. It's been a nice reminder for me that I have no clue what I'm talking about at any
exactly,
point.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. But that's we'll just keep talking. That's
our job, right?
We'll do it. Exactly. We're not paid to be smart. We're just paid to talk.
That's right.
Alrighty, sir. Well, I will let Mr. you get out of here, Mr. Vogt, and then make sure everybody's following you on Twitter at BVOGT422.
Hell yeah.
I know, I finally got it down. But yeah, sir, thanks for being on.
Hey, thanks for having me on, man. Let's do this more. I'd say let's do this more often, but the next time you ask me, I'll probably say I'm not available. So it's on me. Yeah.
You'll be on a private jet somewhere with me, so I'm sure. All right, everybody. Well, we will take a break, and when we come back, we're going to break down the upcoming week. So stick right with us. We'll be right back. We've all been there. When the budget's the tightest or a time is the shortest, that's when disaster strikes. The last thing anyone wants to deal with in these times is an electrical issue in their home or business. Maybe your light suddenly won't turn on, or maybe a home inspector wants that electrical service changed before you can close out on a property you're selling. Heck, maybe it's not even an emergency at all and you're just looking to finish out your basement or get some power ran to that new AC unit. Whatever your need may be, give Sun Electrical a call. They're a family-owned and operated business that serves the Front Range, and you can be assured that you'll not only get the highest quality service, but you'll also get the most affordable price as well. Mike, the owner of Sun Electrical, will come to your home or business personally to evaluate your situation and provide a free estimate, and he stands by the work Sun performs as a fully licensed and insured electrical contractor. So give him a call, 719-659-6888. Don't be fooled by the phone number, as they'll serve the entire Front Range from Colorado Springs to Fort Collins and everywhere in between. That's 719-659-6888. 719-659-6888. Sun Electrical, the home of truly affordable electrical work. Welcome back into the Pickaxe Pundit Show. I am Zach Nikosh with DenverStiffs.com. We spent that first half of the show breaking down the week that was. Started off, of course, with that tough loss to the Milwaukee Bucks. Been nothing but positive from then. Three straight wins from the Denver Nuggets. Getting back on the positive track. Now we will look forward to it. The thing is it's not going to get any easier for Denver. They've got a kind of a weird upcoming week in a schedule. They're going to play like one game over the next 6 days from yesterday against Oklahoma City to now up until through Friday. Friday they'll play Portland. In between there they've got one game, which is the Tuesday night game against the Los Angeles Lakers. To break it down and to round out the all Denver Stiffs podcast network show that we've kind of been putting on here, I do have the host of The Dig. It is Jeremy Pole out in Philadelphia. Jeremy, what's happening?
Not much. Just putting up with some cold lately. It's a little bit different than Colorado cold, but I'm actually surprised how dry it is out here. You would think next to the water that it would come in a little bit different, but my skin is just as snowy as the sky is above me. It's pretty dry. pretty dry.
That's funny. I the Midwesterners always tell me that it's so much worse out there in the winter because of the humidity. Now, I don't know if Philadelphia really qualifies as the Midwest. I think that's probably a little too far east there.
Nope.
But same premise, right? So I think I'm just going to start telling all those people they're full of crap.
There you go. That's a good, default reaction.
Yeah, exactly. No, you're full of crap. I know it. I know a guy in Philly. He told me.
There you go.
That's basically what it comes down to. Yep. Well, I'm glad you're at least staying out of the cold there. Yep. In Philadelphia. Big, I always like talking to you and getting the take because Philly fans are so interesting. So big, I mean, like, do they believe now they're championship contenders, right? Because Jimmy Butler is in tow.
It honestly depends on which day. It is mind-blowing to me how up and down these people are. Like, you know, the day the trade happened, like, yeah, and then they'll lose a game and they're like, oh, we're terrible, these people are never going to figure it out. I've actually been a Philly fan since before I even moved here. Well, this was just not even 2 years ago. Basically, when Joel Embiid came back healthy. And to me, these are the guys. Yeah, Simmons back healthy, Embiid healthy. I saw these guys' ceiling as being as high as anybody in the East. So as much as they haven't really quite figured out where their floor is, they're so young. They're in a very similar situation to the Nuggets. But
right.
If you talk to a Philadelphia fan, you get every possible answer depending on which day you're talking to them. So it's all over the place.
So I'd say also very similar to Denver Nuggets.
Yeah.
And their fans. Exactly. I got people like, there's still people who are trying to, they want to fire the coach. There's
right.
people who like, you know, they're, I mean, the Torrey Craig thing, obviously, which we're going to get into here in a bit. I mean, Mason Plumlee. Now, I think people are finally they've laid off that one. People, Will Barton is one of the like best examples.
Exactly.
Like, there were times last year they like people hated Will Barton, right? And now this year it was like Will Barton's so good. Oh, we miss him so much.
It's been nothing but love. It's been nothing but Barton love. Like also
right.
brain social media. I'm seeing probably like of the ones I actually read still probably 50 to 80. People's reactions to things, and anytime Barton is brought up, it's always love right now, and it is
right.
night and day difference from last season. Night and day.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Last season he was one of the guys he was just the reason the Nuggets are losing
yeah.
every night.
Yeah. Well,
it's kind of funny.
I don't know if they were wrong. I don't.
There were well there. I don't know.
It
I,
depends.
We're gonna get way off topic,
yeah.
but you know, we went down there. We just don't have the time. But another player who is injured and gets a lot of love is Gary Harris.
Mm-hmm.
And now we don't know how long Gary's out. Of course, there was coach said it was an Achilles. Then later the team came back and said no, it's not an Achilles. It's just an ankle. Which when you listen to coach's press conference, he kind of said he wasn't really sure what it was either himself. He thought maybe Achilles. So. Either way, though, Gary was out for the game against the Oklahoma City Thunder. Torrey Craig ends up playing. Me and Brendan broke that one down pretty extensively. But I want to look at, in terms of now looking forward for the looking forward segment of the show, Jeremy. I mean, if Gary Harris is going to be out for, you know, let's just say he's out for this week, so he's going to miss these two games. You know, like I said, you only got two games this week. It's kind of a weird schedule. Maybe you could not play him and just use that time to get him rest. Do you just stick with Torrey Craig as the starter, or do you think coach maybe mixes and matches different players depending on, you know, who the lineup the Lakers have put out there and the lineup the Blazers put out there?
You know, he seemed a little bit more this season into mixing and matching, and he even said that as far as the small forward position went. Now, I mean, basically he went from starting Torrey Craig to just starting Wancho, so I don't know how much like back
right.
and forth that actually is. That's just one switch. But if he does have that attitude of we're going to play the best player depending on the matchup, which I'm leaning towards, I think he's that way. I think we could see just kind of a mishmash here. Like for instance, we've got the Trailblazers game coming up, as you mentioned, this next Friday. So not our next one, but two games away. And that one, to me, is crying out for Torrey Craig. If he can help on the backcourt of the Trailblazers, that's one of the best in the NBA to help
right.
shut them down, lock them down. To me, seems like a very obvious play. Whereas with the Lakers, they're beating us in pace. And it's kind of an odd game to watch, but it's certainly... it feels like a subway train kind of going off of its rails because nothing is polished, nothing is smooth and performed. Everything is just high pace, high intensity. That to me is actually kind of crying out for some Beasley. I could really see him being a strong matchup there, a guy who can take advantage the second that the ball starts to go sideways. That's a guy who can either break or snag the ball and make something happen. And a guy who can shoot if something crazy happens 20 feet away from the basket and he winds up with a ball, that's a guy that can shoot it, you know, on a dime. So,
right.
So I think we could definitely see some versatility. And at this point, the way our bench has been playing, there's nobody who's really been playing too terribly, which is a weird thing to say.
Right.
Like Torrey Craig would actually be the only guy I think you could throw under the bus, up until the last game where he completely shone. We gave him the game ball. He locked down Russell Westbrook. So, yeah, I think it's a matchup thing. I hope it's a matchup thing.
Right. I tend to agree that it is a matchup thing. The thing is, though, I think it's still going to be Torrey Craig both games. Because here's the thing about the Lakers is the recently, at least, the lineup they're playing is they're playing JaVale McGee starting at center. They've got then Kyle Kuzma playing power forward. Mm-hmm. They're playing LeBron James and Brandon Ingram on the wings. And then Lonzo at the point. So that because of the size there, you know, I think if you've got, would you rather, you're basically, whoever's playing that shooting guard spot is probably defending LeBron James, right? Because you're probably going to put Wancho on Ingram. You'll put, and maybe you'll put Millsap on Kuzma. You could maybe put Millsap on LeBron, Wancho on Kuzma. And then, but then you got Brandon Ingram, who's a lengthy guy that you got to cover. I think if I've got a choice between either Malik Beasley or Torrey Craig, I probably am putting Torrey Craig in to start that game because then I'll probably put Torrey Craig on LeBron. I'll probably put Paul Millsap on Kuzma and then Wancho on Ingram. Malik, I just don't know which one of those guys. I mean, maybe you would have Malik defend Brandon Ingram, I guess, and that would be the route you go there, and that wouldn't be terrible. But I think I like the matchup a little bit more there with Torrey Craig. And I think that coach has a little more trust there defensively because he's basically got to think of who am I going to put on LeBron? If it's going to be Millsap, then who's going to cover Ingram out on the wings? And who's going to, because I'm going to obviously have to put Wancho on Kuzma to make up for the height difference. So it's just a tough matchup there, I think, no matter what. And my belief is that he'll probably stick with Torrey Craig. And then with Portland, I agree with you 100%. I mean, you got McCollum and Lillard. You're going to put Murray on one of those guys, obviously. And then, if you can put Torrey Craig on the other one, that's going to help. And then you can switch those two guys and you can kind of put Craig on whichever one's probably killing you more or doing more damage. That's what I would think the way that they would go. And then, of course, you just, you know, Wancho's on Aminu and who plays power forward for Aminu, I guess, playing power forward Aminu, and you got Jake Layman.
Yeah, a lot of Zach Collins in there, too, and he kind of goes between the five and the four.
Right, so you're going to have Paul Millsap in there to handle with him, and then obviously Jokic. So, but I would definitely, I would definitely have Craig there because Beasley, I think you're just playing a game where you're going to try and outscore that backcourt, and I don't think you're going to do that. At least that's not what's been the successful formula for the team thus far this season.
With the Lakers, though, I mean, I may die by it, but I'm game for letting Brandon Ingram beat us.
That's true.
I'm not believing the hype, and the hype going back to the draft, there's very limited hype on him right now. Like, if Brandon Ingram beats us, then my bad. Like, I would have been fooled by that. I'm completely content with putting Millsap on LeBron. To me, that would be a awesome matchup to watch all game long. Mm-hmm. And go ahead and let Wancho cover Ingram. They're actually...
Well, Wancho would be on Kuzma.
Or Kuzma, likely. Sorry. Yeah, on Kuzma. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I was about to say, like, that's a comparable matchup, but no, it's not really. But with Kuzma, it kind of is. These are rebounders who have some distance shooting. Even in that, I'd give Wancho the nod. I think we'd beat them out offensively. So, if Beasley on Ingram, I know that's not a great matchup, but if Ingram honestly puts down 30 points, 35 points on us, then my bad. I got that one wrong, but I'd be very curious to see that. It's going to be a frenetic game, we know that much. To me, that's exactly where Beasley shines. He's performed better when he limits all of the play calling and the technical aspect of professional NBA ball. And to me, the Lakers are not playing the highest standard of professional NBA ball. I think they're trying to take advantage of people out of their pure athleticism. So,
right.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, it's not a bad argument to go with Beasley as the starter there, because you're right. I mean, if Brandon Ingram beats you, then so be it. That's not the guy. He's not number one on your list. He's probably not even number two on your list of guys that you're worried about beating you. I'd think you'd be a little bit more concerned with Lonzo Ball. Now that's because of not necessarily his scoring ability, but everything he does both on the offense and defensive sides of the court. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I mean, if you're going to let – so if Brandon Ingram's going to shoot the lights out, then that's going to happen. And you just gotta live with that as long as you – and you can even potentially overcome that as long as you – you know, as long as you're not turning the ball over a ton to Lonzo, as long as you're not letting LeBron just take over the game on you. The other thing, though, I think that – I guess it comes down to is do you want Millsap or do you want Craig to cover LeBron? And I probably Millsap, right? That's the strength – factor is a lot more even there. I mean, Craig's got the quickness a little bit more, but this is 34-year-old LeBron, not 24-year-old LeBron. So it's a little the quickness probably not as much as the strength a concern. It's just a really weird lineup. Yeah, and wisdom, right? Yeah, exactly. So, Paul Millsap, obviously a vet.
Right, great matchup there. The wisdom and strength of LeBron against the wisdom and strength of Millsap. But to me, I would love watching that just matchup. For matchup, play for play, all game long. I think that would be great.
Right. All right. So, in terms of not necessarily in terms of the individual matchups, but I just did the game overall. I mean, how important is this one? The Nuggets are on a 3-game winning streak. This is the last home game they're going to have before I think they go on like a 5-game road trip after this Lakers game, starting with that game against the Blazers. And it's interesting. They start all the way out in Portland, and then they end up in like down in Florida.
Portland, and then up to Toronto, and then down to Florida.
Yeah, down to Florida. It's like the dumbest road trip ever. But that's what they got coming. So I mean, is it super important to get this win to keep that momentum going into this road trip?
So to me, the Trailblazers game is actually a bigger one. You know, at this point, the NBA that we know, the West that we know, you never want to call any game okay to throw away. But we learned at our height at the start of this season, we lost to the Lakers. There's just a weird matchup there. Right. We saw even in the preseason, there's a weird matchup there. So I'm not confident that we're going to win that game going into it. But Trailblazers is where I want to see, like, to me, that's the measure, is how do you perform against the Trailblazers? If we perform well against the Lakers, I still don't know how we can take that kind of a win and how we perform in that game and match that up against other teams, because it's such a weird kind of ball that's being played. But with the Trailblazers, that's the one where it's like, okay, are we really there? We've been existing side by side this season so far, each having more success than anybody expected of us, but we haven't quite matched up to see, okay, what is real? Which one is better between these two? So with the Lakers one, I mean, I hate to say this, but we've been playing better on the road this season. We've been playing, you know, like there, some of these things that we knew were a certainty with the Nuggets in even back to the Carmelo era, I feel like this season are just not quite as true. In both ways, positives and negatives. So I hate to say it, but the Lakers game means a lot less to me right now than the way that we actually start the away trip against Portland. Damn.
That's good. It's good to have you on the show, because like this is I think rare on the pundits when we this is now another time I'm going to disagree, because I feel like the exact opposite. I'm like, man, I want to beat the Lakers. I just do. Like, so sick. They beat us twice in a row now. Plus, you know, we saw the struggles in the preseason with them, even though we beat them one of those games. If I remember right, it's hard to remember preseason, but if I remember right, it was more of the scrubs ended up outplaying the Lakers scrubs in that one. But, you know, and it's like, I look at these two teams and Portland, I don't know, Portland seemed like such a, and you're right, they're right up there with the Nuggets. They've been the team that the Nuggets have been basically trying to, they've been one step ahead of Denver for about two seasons now, or maybe even three seasons now, you know, and obviously Jusuf Nurkić. There's still going to always be a little bit of bad blood there, but I don't feel like it's like I'm kind of over the whole Nurkić thing now at this point. It's like, whatever, dude. It's like, all right, he left. It worked out for him. It worked out for us. You know, maybe it sucks that he killed his trade value and we had to give up the first rounder to move him. But whatever that was 2 years ago now, and it's I don't know. There's not as much like just despise for Portland.
Let me ask you this. Let me get a better angle here. Are you saying it's more important to get the Lakers win as a fan who has something personally invested, or as a team and what it means to their success and how they match up?
Oh yeah, definitely as a fan, because okay. You're right. When you think about it as a team, if you're going to drop one, you know you got a 3-game winning streak now. You've just basically banked a win against Oklahoma City that you probably weren't expected to get. So, you know, if you lose this game to the Lakers, then that sucks. But then you come back and win on the road against the division rival, against the team who's going to be right there. I mean, the tiebreaker implications, which are important for the Lakers as well, but not as important as they would be for the Trailblazers. So, yeah, I mean, from a team perspective, I would agree that I think that Blazers game is probably a little bit more important.
Then I totally hear you. I am always ready to jump on any train headed down to Lakers fan SmackDown sessions. Like, I'm totally in on that. Personally, so much more at stake in that Lakers game, just because it's these stinking Lakers fans. They're everywhere.
Right. Well, and I think the other thing too is I think with the teams themselves, there's like there's. I think more so, you know, you think Jusuf Nurkić maybe doesn't like the Nuggets,
right?
In general, has just personally doesn't like them, and probably isn't fond of Coach Malone, I'm guessing, and you know, and how everything went down there. But that's really, I mean, Damian Lillard doesn't care, right. CJ McCollum doesn't right. care. Like those guys they're just there playing their game, and the Nuggets are just another division rival. Like there seems to be something about these Lakers, like the young Lakers, at least. Them and the Nuggets, the young core, those two young cores pretty much seem like they just genuinely dislike each other, you know, and now they've got us twice in a row. And so I think it grinds at me, and I think it grinds at the players to know that this team's beat them two times in a row.
All right. You've sold me on it. Like, yeah, that Lakers game is going to mean more to me now. I completely agree. And probably to the Nuggets as well, at least our young guys. At least, well, let's be honest, Jamal Murray.
Jamal Murray, right. Yeah, Jamal for sure. But I think the rest of the guys, though, I think they rallied around it, you know, like just like because it's the Jamal versus Lonzo thing, right? But, I mean, we've seen we saw even – and now it's funny because he's on the Nuggets, but we saw how Isaiah Thomas last year when he was on the team for, like, you know, a few weeks – and he was like, and he was into it. Like, you know, you could tell it meant something to him to beat the Nuggets. So, you know, like, just by the way they've acted out on the court, you know that, like, there's something going on there that they talk about. Both teams get up for these games. It's a lot more chippy than a regular season game usually is. And so, I'd like to say, we've lost the last two. Really sets it. We won the game that started it, right? And Jamal dribbled around Lonzo. Right. And that was what really started it. But since it's been started, the Lakers have won both times. So,
you know, you make me wonder now. You brought up Isaiah Thomas. I wonder if in his mind, through all the rehabilitation he's gone through, if he didn't have this game circled on his calendar, like, man, I've got to make it back by this game.
Right.
Because he's the type of guy that we know is the one who can carry a grudge, who games mean something to him personally more than just as a professional athlete. So it's a shame that he won't be able to play in this one. I wonder if he still tries to do something special or be something special to the Nuggets for this one.
Right. I'm sure. I mean, he definitely, as we've seen him, you know, throughout the season, I'm sure he's going to be talking with guys and coaching them up. And he's probably going to be a little bit more focused and hopefully making sure the rest of the locker room is a little more focused for this game and reminding them, you know, like that's what you really want. Isaiah Thomas, like he should be talking smack in the locker room this week and reminding them that how last year when he was on the Lakers, they beat this team. And then how once again this year they beat this team. You know, that's where I think they could use him the most, just helping to get this team pumped up to make sure that they're ready to, you know, really, really come out and win this game. All right. We had to cut Jeremy off there a little bit. Actually had to cut me off. And by my recorder, cause I was the idiot who didn't realize he was running out of space on his, on his recording device. And so we did lose about the last 2 minutes or so of that conversation, which is fine. Nothing groundbreaking happened in that last 2 minutes, I promise you. Anyways, make sure you guys are checking us all out on our different Twitter handles. I'm at Zach Mikos, Jeremy's at Jeremy Poli, Brendan Vogt at BVOGT422. Ryan Blackburn is at NBA Blackburn. Give all those guys a follow. Give Denver Stiffs a follow and Pickaxe Pundits. Both of those are just how you would think it. At Denver Stiffs, at Pickaxe Pundits. Give all those social medias a follow. You'll get some kind of different stuff and unique perspectives, obviously, from the individual hosts themselves, as well as the site and the show. So make sure you're checking that all out. Check us out on Instagram as well, at The Denver Stiffs. Over on YouTube, make sure you guys are subscribed to our YouTube channel. If you want to be able to see the post-game, pre-game press conferences, that is one of the best places to get it. So always good to subscribe there. Plus, I got some other cool shows out there. Brendan and Adam Morris do a nice NBA show on our YouTube channel as well, you want to check out. And who have I forgot? Facebook? Yeah, you should probably check us out on Facebook if people are still on Facebook. I'm not. But, you know, I'm sure there's somebody out there who still is. So make sure you're following us over there. We haven't forgot about you. Jeremy, specifically, our social media coordinator, has not forgot about you over on Facebook. And finally, make sure you guys are subscribed on iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts. You know, you got perspectives from a little taste of everything this network has to offer. So it's not just the Pickaxe Pundits anymore. Nuggets Numbers with Ryan Blackburn, a good analytics show that also still takes a kind of common analysis approach while using analytics. So it's kind of, I really think it's a great show for everyone. The Dig is my favorite just because it's the most fun. The Dig has got some cool stuff going on there. I like their editing too. They do a good job over there. Big shout out to Nick. He I can tell he puts in a lot of time behind the scenes on that thing, so you guys want to check that out. And then for a totally different perspective that's not even necessarily Nuggets, Brennan, of course, is the host of the Full Court Press. That's a really cool show. I really like it. I'm a little bit biased because I'm quote-unquote in the media, but Brennan kind of dives into some backstories of some of the different media people around Denver and what their path and their approach to doing what we do is. And so it's a really kind of cool, different angle on things. He's got a great one with Adam Mares. He's got a great one with Matt Moore over at Action Network. Matt's probably the biggest fish in the Denver media pond, so to say. So at least of the non-TV people, we'll put it that way. So make sure you're checking out. Make sure you're checking out this podcast network. It's really great, a lot of fun stuff. So subscribe to that, leave a rating. We would appreciate it. And as always, we appreciate you guys listening to us. And we will talk to you next week. This is all